And that's why I think it's important that people are out in the streets. One of the folks who will be out in the streets tomorrow in Raleigh, North Carolina, is Mary B. McMillan. She's Secretary Treasurer of the North Carolina State AFL-CIO. She'll be in the streets. Mary B., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick, for having me on the show.
You've written an interesting piece, Organize the South or Die. It's something I've been saying for years now, that, you know, we've got to look at the South much like we looked at Mexico or other countries that we need to raise up, because if we allow them to continue this to continue, we all go down.
You're absolutely right. I've long said that the labor movement can learn a valuable lesson from the civil rights movement, and that is that the road to justice goes through the South. Civil rights leaders understood that if they wanted to win freedom for people of color everywhere, they had to win it first in the most difficult place, the segregated South. And so for us, if we want worker justice throughout the nation, then we have to wage the battle where it is most difficult for working people. And it's no surprise that, yet again, it's right here in the South.
You know, I look at, you know, Nikki Haley. When you hear a governor, and this is just it's something I've been fixated with. I know that, you know, deep down that they're, you know, they're a lot of the right-wing governors like Haley and Tom Corbett are anti-worker. I get that. But to come out in front of the Walmart shareholders and say, you know what, we're going to use the power of our government to keep workers from organizing, to me, I got to be honest, that should be a clarion call for workers in the South to rise up.
Well, it should be a call not just for workers in the South to rise up. It should be a call for national labor leaders to invest heavily in organizing workers here in the South. Because the question really is, are we going to let the anti-worker, anti-union laws of the South pervade the country, or are we going to stop it at its source? I mean, we see Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan looking a whole lot more like North Carolina and other southern states with their anti-union laws. Are we going to stop this? Are we going to invest in the South where these laws originate?
Yeah, and the sad thing is, you know, this whole right to work movement, which they call right to work, it's actually right to work for very little, or as I call it, the no rights at work agenda. They're attempting to push that all across the country. And you mentioned Michigan and Indiana. Right here in Pennsylvania, there's always talk of that, and there's always money to fund that and to fuel it. And, you know, it seems to me at some point labor's got to say, you know what, we've got to push back against all of the things that we've seen for the last 30 years, all of the stagnant economic incomes, all of the destruction of health care benefits, the destruction of pensions, all of that stuff. At some point, we've got to make that case to the American people.
That's right. And people need to realize that the population's growing in the South. That means our political representation will grow. Will have more influence in the country. You know, we in the South, unfortunately, keep electing a lot of these conservative Tea Party folks that go to Congress and then wreak havoc with policies. And then we see companies like Boeing moving to the South to avoid union contracts. We saw the automakers moving to Alabama and Mississippi, trying to go for cheap labor and to avoid unions. So really, I think that we've got to organize the South if we want to change this country.
Now, as someone who's a labor leader in the southern state, do the workers see that? I mean, is it that the culture is so vehemently anti-union that they've been told for so many years that, oh, that's something bad? Or is it that the laws and the structure is such that it's much more difficult to join and form unions in the South?
I think it's both. I mean, certainly there is a cultural history here that makes it difficult for workers to understand the advantages of a union. Plus, we have the anti-worker laws like right to work for less and no collective bargaining rights for public employees. But when unions have invested here, when they've given workers hope and allowed workers to see that change is possible, we've had some huge victories. For example, in 2008, after 15 years of struggle, the United Food and Commercial Workers won this huge victory at Smithfield Packing in Tar Heel, North Carolina, the world's largest pork slaughterhouse. And a lot of that came about because the union invested here, because we had huge investment by labor in 2008 in the election here. North Carolina went blue, and workers had a slogan going into their election, which was in December 2008. They said, "We won the White House, we can win the Hog House too," and they did.
And I think those are important stories, because I know we covered it as it was going on. I mean, it was one of those things that had been going on for so long, but the victory was huge. But do you think that, you know, given the state of labor, which, you know, many are saying is the attacks coming from everywhere, do they have the resources to invest? And I know the AFL-CIO is having their convention in California in the next couple of days, and I'm sure a lot of this will be on the agenda. The question is, do they have the resources?
I think the resources are there. It's figuring out how to use them more effectively and more strategically. And the other reason I think the South is so important is, yes, we have all these anti-worker laws, but there's really some great movement building going on here in the South. Here in my home state of North Carolina, we've had these Moral Monday protests with the NAACP. People are hungry for change, and many of the strategies that nationally the labor movement is now seeking to embrace, like coalition building and standing with the civil rights movement, we've been doing in the South for years. And I think that there's people here are hungry for change, people are fired up and ready to take action, and I think that an investment here would go a long way.
You know, I look at, you brought up a number of the Tea Party representatives, and you know, the whole, a lot of the southern states are polling-wise say that they're against the Affordable Care Act and against a lot of the things that, that would actually help the people in those states. And the Center for American Progress did a study not too long ago that showed that the Affordable Care Act would have helped, you know, overwhelmingly the people who their representatives voted against it. And, you know, I sit and I look at that and I go, you know, where's the disconnect and why is the disconnect? Is it that we haven't invested and we haven't done the education necessarily that the right has done masterfully, or is it more?
I think part of it is that there is no alternative to what folks hear on talk radio here. You know, I think about my hometown of Hickory, North Carolina, in the western part of the state. It was the furniture capital of the country, but now all those factories are boarded up, you know, casualties of NAFTA and CAFTA. And yet the folks there keep reelecting a congressional representative who time and again votes against their interests. And it's largely because, you know, there's no voice there to counter what people hear on talk radio. There's no union organizing workers. There's no, you know, canvassers from Working America talking to folks about, you know, taking our country back and talking about corporate greed and workers getting their fair share. I think that if workers in the South saw the alternative, if they understood that change was possible, if there was hope, like we saw with the workers at Smithfield Packing and Tar Heel, they would choose to take action and vote more in their economic self-interest.
Yeah, I got to tell you, though, Mary B., I'm extremely excited by what I see with the Fast Food Forward campaigns and all of the fast food workers, and tomorrow the Walmart workers across the country taking to the streets. I think that those industries, the low-wage, service-based economy that we've allowed to be created out from under us as we've lost manufacturing, I think those have got to be the middle-class jobs of the next generation, and we have got to do what my grandparents did. My grandmother worked, was a UFCW member for, you know, 25-odd years, worked for a small department store in Cleveland, Ohio, where she made $8 an hour in 1985, which doesn't sound like a lot, but they're not making $8 an hour today in a lot of these retail outlets. We're talking 27 years ago. 28 years ago, she was making that with health care, with vacation, with pension, not one of these crummy 401ks, an actual defined benefit pension. So I know it can be done. It's just a matter of we have to do the organizing and do it.
That's right. And I'm really excited as well about the organizing that's happening in the fast food industry and at Walmart. I'm very excited that they're making some investment here in the South. It was great to see fast food workers walking out of their jobs and various cities in North Carolina last week, and then to have an action coming up tomorrow here in Raleigh with Walmart. I absolutely agree with you that we've got to be organizing the low-wage service sector jobs. We have to show people that we are not destined to become a Walmart society. You know, we've got to fight back against corporate greed, and it's got to, you know, we've got to fight back against this view that, you know, corporate greed's acceptable, but workers asking for their fair share is not. If these companies are making billions, we shouldn't be debating about whether they can pay workers a living wage.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the CEO of McDonald's made $8.75 million last year. That's, you know, even if you buy the fact that Walmart says they pay $8.75 an hour, that's still a million hours someone who actually creates the wealth and does the actual work. A million hours someone would have to work in a year to be able to earn what that CEO takes.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely ridiculous, and I don't understand why there aren't more people in America that are incensed by the corporate greed and the disproportionate distribution of wealth in this country. I mean, folks really need to be taken to the streets and demanding change.
Yeah, there's a part of me that thinks that we've, for so long, been beaten and so long been, you know, just be glad you've got a job kind of mentality, that we've developed some form of Stockholm syndrome where we now identify with our captors and say, oh, yes, we need to have this billionaire class, because without them, without the very well-to-do and the executives who take all the spoils, we would just be standing around staring at each other.
I think that's beginning to change. I mean, I think people are beginning to rise up. I think people are beginning to understand that it's workers that are the job creators. We are the consumers, and when we don't have jobs and when we are earning peanuts, we can't buy things, and the whole economy suffers. And so, you know, I'm definitely encouraged by the fast food strikes, by the Walmart actions. I'm encouraged by what I see in my own state of North Carolina with the Mall Mondays. I think that people are getting fed up.
I'm
and
with you.
They're starting to demand their fair share.
Last line of questioning I've got for you. You know, like I said, the AFL-CIO convention's coming up. What are you expecting to come out of this? I mean, there are a lot of people who have high expectations of some pretty serious change. What are you expecting? What are your expectations?
You know, this convention is really to consider the future of the labor movement, because we understand that we're in crisis. We've had, you know, years of declining membership. We're up against this Goliath of corporate greed and corporate campaign cash. So I think that national labor leaders realize we need to start doing things differently and think outside the box. And for me, if they're really serious about doing things differently, then that's got to bode well for the long forgotten South. So I'm hopeful that it will mean non-traditional ways of organizing, more alliances with our community partners, and more investment in places where the labor movement traditionally hasn't invested.
Do you think some of the investment will come at the expense of politicians? Because I got to be honest, I look at all the money that labor has spent on politicians over the years, and I think it had been better spent building infrastructure and better spent, you know, hiring grassroots organizers to build the grassroots and to build up from the bottom up instead of from the top down.
I think there's a lot of folks in the labor movement that are questioning our political investments, so I think that will be part of the discussion. You know, certainly if we want to grow the movement, we have to invest more in grassroots organizing, and we have to make sure that folks understand that we're going to be the movement for all workers. We're low-wage professional, you know, and that the future of the labor movement depends not on what happens in Washington, D.C. It depends on what happens in the places we all call home. And I think that's why we need to make investments in the South and in small towns throughout the country.
Yeah, it's in every home and every community and every workplace across the country. I'm with you, Mary B. Mary B. McMillan, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Secretary Treasurer of the North Carolina AFL-CIO. Quick break, right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I ain't gonna work.